Welcome to the Swedish Junior Hockey Podcast. Today's guest from Leksand, the metropolitan area of hockey in Sweden, Jan Kahns. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Jakob.
This episode is brought to you by Scandlux, your home for Scandinavian luxury products for the U.S. market. You can find us at scandlux.com.
So, you and I have a little bit of a background because we grew up in villages outside of Leksand, next to each other, I've drove by your house thousands of times through the years, and now we reconnected in the Bäschäng bypubben as of late, which is the pub of Bäschäng village.
Yes, we've been there for 14 years, so it was finally your turn to show up there.
Yes, I had to bring some international flair, and I realized really quick that my political views were not necessarily aligned with everybody in the crowd, but that's
it
okay.
It was uplifting for us.
But what we're going to talk about? You and I have talked a little bit off and on about and your background and your role is really about facilities and not necessarily a sexy topic, but I think it's something that is really interesting. And two things that I want to talk about, and that is, you know, the problems with ice facilities, and it's universal over here in the U.S. or in Sweden, the problem and how that correlates with the goals of growth, the hockey is for everybody problem, that hockey is no longer for everybody over here. It's very, very expensive. And then towards the end, I hope that we can go towards like, all right, if we're going to design a hockey rink, what would be the optimal way? And I know you have expertise in lighting, sound, amenities, and lots of those things. So I think that would be fun to talk about. But let's start off a little bit because I think it'd be good to get kind of a context about, because I think not everybody has enjoyed growing up in Leksand. And what is hockey? What's your hockey background? We talked a little bit about skiing first, but
yeah,
you know, but what's your hockey background?
Of course, I've played ice hockey. It's it started with just outside the little pub we have.
Yep,
it's a small pond,
very small.
Kind of good
lighting
for technique.
Yeah,
with lighting. Two lightings. So there, we grew up there and we were mastering the difficult with not the pure fine ice, but some cracks and some bubbles and so on. So it was, when it was dark, it wasn't that easy to play ice hockey there. The puck didn't smoothly go among the ice, so it jumped over the club all the time. And
And no boards.
No boards, just snow.
Yes.
It was a lot of digging for the puck.
Yes, I remember that
Don't
too.
Don't shoot too hard.
You know, interesting part about that growing up, because I grew up playing in Torberg on the Grandamana.
The pond.
Fire pond.
A little bit bigger.
A little bit bigger, but you know, the you learn the technique of, so nobody was wearing shin pads.
Nope.
So you couldn't lift the puck. You were not allowed to shoot the puck high.
No.
So everything had to be on the ice, which really improved passing. There was nobody to stand there hitting slap shots.
No.
It was all about passing and moving the puck. And you don't want to lose the puck because then you may not find it again.
Absolutely right.
And I don't know about you when you grew up, but we didn't have that. We didn't have a puck bucket. We may have had one or two pucks.
Yeah, if you had three pucks for one evening, you had a lot of pucks.
Yes.
Mostly one, maybe two. So don't ever lose it.
Yeah,
then
yeah.
the game is over and we can walk home.
Yeah, yeah. And they were, and I, growing up, we didn't buy a puck. It was always a puck that you picked up at the game that you put in your pocket or something. And
I can assure you, I have still some pucks in the big arena. Yeah, it was a hard value.
yes. But okay, so you grew up there, so I was actually, when I was home, we were talking to my dad, and of course they had Bialog back then, but you're too young to have been part of
No,
Bialog.
we had it too.
Okay.
When I got a little bit older, we played in the Bialag, then the village teams.
Okay.
So we were, I think we won the tournament once.
Okay.
We had a very stable, very massive defenseman.
Who
So
was the best player in Bescheng at the time?
that was Tommy Karlsson, Tommy
Okay.
Kula Karlsson. He had played on the highest level
Okay.
in Södertälje.
Wow.
So that was the guy. If he got the puck, no one could take it from him.
Yeah.
It was
That's interesting.
impossible. And it was built like a, what do you call it, a diggling? A small pig.
Yeah.
So it was very hard in the body. And he was extremely fast with the puck. So no one could take it from him. So he mostly defenseman.
Yeah. But I think
So
the reason I bring that up is because, to me, that's the core of hockey in Sweden. As I was growing up, it's everybody, when people ask me, oh, did you play hockey? Well, everybody played hockey in Sweden to a
yeah.
certain degree. Some were better than others, and and then you had the SHL or Elitserien team in Leksand, and the youth organization. But there was kind of this recreational level and mixed ages,
Yeah.
adults and kids, and shuffling of sticks, and
Yeah. Yeah,
it was
absolutely.
just a fun activity, right?
Yeah. But you got to, if you, as the smallest kid, you have to toughen up
Yeah.
a lot because otherwise you will be put off the rink. So you have to be tough in the body. And it
Yeah.
was a, when you had that and came to the organized ice hockey team in Leksand, you had the toughness in you that the big guys had shown you how here is what you have to do.
And
So
isn't too, like, that's the original teams in the 60s that Leksand built before Rune Moses came in and recruited
yeah.
Åbris and all of the Uffe Mortensen and these guys that
Yeah.
are, he would go out and get from
Lars-Erik Sjöberg.
well, and I was going to use Lars-Erik Sjöberg as an example. He grew up in Lochness, or
Yes.
I
Oh,
believe,
yeah. Yes.
but he was one of those guys that,
Yeah.
and I think I remember that he had an incredible physique,
Yeah.
as a
But
athlete.
really, and a really good balance.
Yeah.
You couldn't shuffle him in.
But those guys grew up in that environment, excelled, and then became an elite player in Leksand when they had the opportunity,
Yeah.
through youth up to juniors and then into the elite team. And
Absolutely.
then
Would. That they were role models for us kids.
Yeah.
When Lars-Erik came to his uncle in the in Bescheng, it was like God himself had turned up on the face of earth.
Yeah.
All the guys sat there with big eyes and open mouth and just listened to all the stories of NHL. So it was unreal,
Yeah.
kind of. And we got clubs from him, sticks,
Yeah.
signed Bobby Orr, Bobby Hull, you name it. And those we played with, and they went to more like wood
Yeah.
sticks.
Yeah.
So, I should have left one at least.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And he had a
It's important with the role models, because you know if I can work really hard, I can maybe get there.
Yeah, I remember watching, going through my dad's photo album, and he was 15, and he had a picture with Vilgot Larsson,
Oh.
and he was there, given technique training when he was 15,
Yeah.
and he said, "Me and Vilgot Larsson,"
Yeah.
and they had
It
been,
was me and Kari Eloranta.
yeah,
He trained us defensemen.
it was me and Burakovsky.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
It was a classmate of mine.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
when he was actually in class.
Yeah, Heinz
Yeah.
Ehlers and Robert Burakovsky and the Imhauser.
Yeah. See, so here's kind of the generational difference between you and I. I was a kid and you were a young adult when they were in hockey gymnasium and you were in gymnasium. I was 9, 10 years old, or 8 or 9, and I was in the beginnings of, and those were my idols,
Yeah.
Jonas Bergqvist, Per Karlsson, Burakovsky, Heinz Ehlers, all of those guys that, and we would practice. The fun thing about when I was growing up is we would, as a U10 or U12, we practiced after the elite team.
Yeah.
And you were in the locker room next to it, and the smell of liniment, and when they were getting their
Ammonia.
yeah. I mean, it's just kind of the culture of growing up in a town that has a elite team. But in Sweden, whether that is so, my son plays in Mariestad, and they have a Hockeyettan, so
Yeah.
third division in Sweden. And we went to one of the, we went there to visit a couple of weeks ago. And the same thing is in a small town like Mariestad that doesn't have an SHL team. It's just not as big. But the town isn't, well, Leksand is smaller than Mariestad,
Yeah, definitely.
but in a small town, the hockey team is super important. Everybody knows all the players. When you come into town, it says, "Hockey game tonight."
Yeah, you can't hide as a player.
No.
There's only 16,000 people there, so everyone knows who the players are.
Yeah.
If you have done a bad game, everyone knows you.
Yeah.
If you're
But
good, it's good.
how did you get into kind of the, because you worked pretty much all your life in engineering facilities and that stuff.
Yes, it started with energy engineering and grow up, and then I saw the new arena was going to build, so I applied for the job and I got the job.
That was it. That was which arena? Tegera.
Ejndals,
Ejndals. Okay.
now Tegera Arena.
Yeah.
So
And
I was the arena manager for the first 2 years there.
if I remember right, your dad was a had a entrepreneur, or he was a ran a backhoe and
Yeah.
for a lot of years, all of his life.
What's it called in English? Excavator.
Grading and excavating
Yeah.
business. So you had
Yeah.
a you grew up in a big sandbox.
Yeah. No one wanted to compare the tractor with me. I had always the biggest.
Yeah.
I've driven it for since I was 5 years.
So mechanical interest and building things was kind of in your DNA and in your
Yeah.
interest from the beginning.
Yeah, a dirty background.
Yeah.
Always dirty.
But so let's talk about that. So let's go into this topic about the problem of hockey facilities in Sweden. So question number one, is there sufficient number of hockey rinks in Sweden today to take care of the demand or the need from where hockey wants to go today?
Very simple answer. No, we
Yes.
need more.
And talk about, so let's use Leksand as an example, because Leksand is just like all small towns, Stockholm, Gothenburg, Linköping, Malmö, they're a little bit different animals because they're big metropolitan cities,
Yeah.
but there's hundreds of, I think there was somebody was saying that there's 450 youth organization or clubs in Sweden,
Yeah.
and they're all a bunch of Leksands.
In Leksand, we have 8,000 people per ice surface. In Stockholm, you have 100,000 people per ice surface.
Wow.
So it's kind of different.
Yeah. But there's
So
still so but even within a town of Leksand, so you have two sheets. For a long, long time you only had one sheet, but you relied on a lot of these smaller ponds
yeah,
back
we had
then, but
some outside rinks, natural ice. On that, in that time, we had something that called winter. When it gets cold and the ice
well,
makes itself.
if I
So,
remember right, a couple of weeks ago, we had winter in Sweden too when I was there. So,
yes, yes, it was cold when you were there. So.
yeah, but okay. So you have two sheets now. You have a main arena where the SHL team plays. Seats
Yeah.
about what, 7,000?
There's 7,650.
Okay.
It takes a little, almost half of Lexon's totally amount of people.
In the not just Leksand Centrum, but the entire
No, the whole municipality.
which it was funny. I was coming in, driving into town as the game was over, and I was driving through Vonsbro, and I was like, why are all these people driving in the middle of nowhere? And I remember, and this
In
was
the
about
same direction.
in the same direction, and it was snowing, and it was I don't know, it was late at night. And I wasn't necessarily used to driving on snowy roads that much, but I was wondering, and then it occurred to me, and this was 45 minutes, an hour away, and they were driving home from the rink.
Yeah. It's a lot of people in a such a small community.
Yeah, and
So,
coming from Falun, Borlänge,
yeah.
maybe not Mora.
Some from Mora, yeah.
Yeah,
But
they don't.
just a small amount.
Yeah. But okay, if we use that as an example, because I think it's similar in all of these towns. There's typically only one rink in a town. Who owns the rinks normally?
Normally, the municipality owns the rink. It's only some of the arenas that's owned by the hockey club.
Okay.
So mostly the community and the municipality owns the ice rinks.
Okay. And which is very different over here, where you have maybe a public-private partnership or a private individual, or what's happening here in the US is the big corporations are buying up all the ice and
Yeah.
it's creating its own problem with pricing. But so as a youth, my son plays J20, and I think the team fees are very, very inexpensive. He may have paid, 5,000 Swedish crowns for a season, right?
Yeah.
Which is the equivalent of $450. If
Yeah.
he played over here, he would have been, let's say $8,000 or $9,000,
Oh my God.
Yeah. If you
Oh, only
played
the rich kids. Yeah.
at the same level, right?
Yeah.
But even when he played youth hockey here, our fees were maybe $2,500. No. Yeah, so about $2,500 for a season. So let's say
Okay.
20,000 Swedish crowns. But the
Yeah.
reason was because we were paying, $5 a minute for ice time,
Okay.
and which is fairly cheap. So you pay about $400 an hour for ice over here,
Okay.
and who pays that is the club pays it to the rink owner.
Okay.
And in some places, it's $500, $600 an hour just to rent the ice.
Yeah. In Sweden, it's more like like in Leksand, the hockey club owns the arena, and the municipality rents time for the kids to be able to play there. So the kids doesn't pay anything more than to
The
the team.
organizational fee or something, right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's a very small amount anyhow. So
But that's
it's
kind of how it's made up, is that hockey is a part of providing hockey as a recreational sport is part of the municipality's offering for wellness and activity and recreation, just like they have a playground or they have a soccer field or so on, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But because of that, it's not cheap to run an ice facility.
Nope.
Not cheap
it's
to
quite
build
expensive.
It. So since you were part of running Tegera when they tore down the old ice Estadion.
Yeah.
Or they built it first and then they tore down the old one, but it was not cheap.
No. But compared to all the other arenas, Leksand's was cheap. It was about 160 million Swedish crowns, which is a lot of money, but it's not expensive.
Okay.
I think Modo paid 250, maybe 300 million. Brynäs Gävle paid about 200 million. Södertälje, something, 250 million. So Leksand was a very cheap arena, but it's still a lot of money in here.
Well, it's because our family donated a bunch of timber for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of it. It was the second arena.
Yeah, that was in the LRF
training.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's it made us have two surfaces to have activities on. So it's the big arena is for the public and it's for the happening.
Yeah.
And the event starts when you got from your own house until you get back to your own house. So when we've talked about this, when we just building it, we said it when we have got that far, that ice hockey is the excuse for going there and not the main event.
Yeah.
It's because you want to meet people, you want to talk to them, you maybe want to have dinner, you want to take some beer, like that. That's
yeah.
the. So we haven't got there yet.
But I mean, a town like Leksand, I mean, hockey in Leksand it's part of the identity and has been for such a long time, and it is one of the attractions that brings in tourism. It brings in a lot of money to the local economy in so many ways. I mean, I know that there's always this debate about how much should the public fund the team, and there's been all of that. But there's no doubt that Leksand's hockey in all ages, not just the elite team, but the juniors and hockeyskolan and the academy and Hockey Gym, the academy there, brings in a lot of money. Let's just call spade to spade. That brings in money to the local economy.
It keeps hotels running. It keeps restaurants running. It keeps the groceries running because it's a lot of people visiting there. And they try to get Thursday and Saturday game, and families can get there, join up, and stay there, consume some, and spend their money.
Yeah,
so it's very good.
But I think
definitely
it's also
economical positive.
And I think the other part, of course, is that it's not just about bringing in money in the economy. It's also bringing. I mean, the value of notoriety and advertisement and being a interesting spot in a, you know, what's the identity of, you know, like Vansbro has Vansbro, the swim event, you know, that's what they're known for. Mora is really about Vasaloppet.
Yes.
When you're driving through some of these towns that, you know, used to be maybe a mining town and it's now closed down, well, that was the identity. And, you know, so Leksand, I think hockey in Leksand is super important. But go back to this thing about the facilities. It is expensive and it costs a lot of money and it is funded by the people, but it still remains that it's not enough. You have two sheets in Leksand, which is like it is everywhere, and it's really, really expensive. Talk about this thing. So not a lot of people in the US know about the energy crisis in Sweden. And how did that I actually meant to, in my preparation, I just got my power bill the other day, and I was gonna
This you haven't prepared me for.
I was gonna pull my power bill and we were gonna compare power rates, but I didn't get that far. So we have to do that off.
It's not the electricity. It goes. It needs a lot of electricity. And so to build an arena that doesn't consume energy like traditional, you have to look somewhere else. So we made a different kind of solution, not in Sweden, but in Norway. And it turns out that that ice hockey arena, it consumes half of what the best ice rink in arena used to consume before. So I know we know the idea works, and you're kind of setting a bubble above the ice in, but you produce the bubble with the air. So there's one air above the ice, and there's one a completely different kind of ventilation air system on the for the audience. So therefore, it doesn't need that much energy. So now we know it works.
Is that a pressure system?
Nope. It's an own idea.
Okay.
We kind of tested it in Germany and saw the air movements, and we said this will work.
Okay.
So it's a different humidity, it's a different temperature
Yeah.
over the ice. And therefore we can produce another climate where for the public.
Okay. So talk about that, because you have a lot of experience when it comes to, when you go to an SHL event, the elite hockey, it's a spectator sport. And since when they built Tegera, and I'm sure that you would have designed it differently today after you've worked in it for many years, right? And you learned through the years, but what are the most important part? I mean, so you mentioned kind of temperature, it has to be functional, but as a spectator, I remember going to the events as a kid and it was freezing in there. East audience was really, really cold. And you have to, it's like being outside versus today's arenas where it's more comfortable, as a spectator.
You can produce the perfect climate for the spectators by using the idea I just showed you. But there's nothing built like that in Sweden. It's not even built in the other countries. It's one in Norway who tested it.
Okay.
So it's possible. We know it's manageable, but in an arena, it's all about logistics. If you don't know all the activities that's going on in an arena behind the audience or the spectators see,
Yeah.
you have media, we have ice hockey players, of course. You have all the people who work there check the tickets and show people on the right way. You have security and so on. I think it's about 14, 15 different kind of activities that shouldn't cross.
Yes.
So you have to make lines and boxes, and you can see the flow of where they move. And you think, take an example. When you design the dressing room, and the guy who prepares the what do you call it, skridskor, help me,
Yeah, that sharpens the skates,
skate,
and
sharpens again, and he have to run away and get another stick for a player. He can't have that distance. It has to be very near. And also the medical team have to have it. All these kind of activities, they don't have to, they can't cross each other. You can't have the ice machine going through the queue when the people are going to buy some popcorn, for example. You have to think about that. And there's a lot of mistakes made when you see the arenas. And I think really there's one arena in Sweden where the queue to the popcorn selling have to go aside for the ice machine
Oh,
to
okay.
pause. So that's not well thinking.
But another problem is, for example, so the biggest, I guess it's still the biggest arena, the Stockholm Globe Arena, which is now Avicii, which was this great grandiose idea that but from a hockey perspective, it's a terrible place because it's too big.
Too big, too much air. They are rebuilding it now, so they are putting in a inner roof, the ceiling. So it's not that big anymore inside.
But it's, bigger's not always better. And
No.
we see it here in the, for example, an AHL team in Charlotte, North Carolina. They used to play in what's called the Spectrum Center, which was a downtown arena that where the NBA team is. Cleveland Barons plays, does the same thing where the NBA team plays. And let's face it, you're not going to have 15,000 people come for a, there's 15,000 seats.
Okay.
But it may be 5,000 people coming or 3,000 people coming, and it looks half empty, and it's just this big open space, which makes the experience not very good. What's great
Yeah.
about what's so great about a place like Leksand, or I remember as a kid going to Brynäs,
Yeah.
the bleachers were very steep,
Yeah.
the crowd is really close to the ice surface, and the atmo and it's it the atmosphere is very it's it becomes very loud, and
Very intense.
it becomes this experience
Yeah.
that I remember, right? But same thing with Leksand, you have the standing room section,
Yeah.
which growing up and coming back, and it was on the wrong side for me. I flipped sides,
That
which was really
changed.
difficult for me to comprehend, but
There was a big discussion about that.
yeah, but you have standing room, which packs it in. And I was just reading in the news about how do we improve the Norra Stå, about the effect that it gives to the players, but then also to the experience of everybody else that are coming, right?
They're
And
good at sharing.
yeah. And for example, that's a problem in Toronto Maple Leafs, where you have the seats are so expensive, it's just a bunch of suits. They're sitting in the long bowl, and
Like this, all
yeah,
quiet.
all quiet, and it's not a good experience
No.
to go to, perhaps.
No.
So if we go into this, how would you, so if you were going to design the arena, you would be thinking about energy consumption. Is how important is that factor if you were going to design an arena today?
It's not the prime factor, no. For everyone to enjoy it there, you have to be able to buy anything you want without a queue. Easy to get, easy to handle, to spend some of your money, not all your money, perhaps some of it we may share. And then you have to think of it as an it's a happy event. You have to think of that. There's a lot of feelings going on. We're happy, we're cheering, and it doesn't go well, we are down in the mood. So for an arena to be able to do that, you have to make it kind of acoustic good. So you can hear everyone, but it without being deaf. So you don't have to protect your ears, but it will be that intense and quite narrow. If it's too big, it's unpersonal, and you can't get in touch with, you can't hear the sound on the ice. So it's very important that you can see it, you can hear it, you can almost feel it, what's happening on the ice rink. So that's one. Light is a very important.
I know how much you like shadows of players when you watch games.
No, it's some of them are a disaster. It's completely disaster. I think, what kind of retard designed this light?
Yes.
You saw four shadows under every player.
Yeah.
I think, what did he think, or did she think of when they designed that?
Yeah.
So the light is very important, but you don't want to see it as a spectator. You don't want to get it in your eyes. So restrain it very carefully
Yeah.
and think when you're doing it.
Yeah.
Planning is everything. And so, and an arena today is not only ice hockey, sometimes it's a musical show.
Yeah.
And you have to get that comfort zone and the kind of atmosphere that's in a theater in the same room
Yeah.
from one day to another.
Yeah.
So it's very important with the colors you put on, all the sound, the music, the people on the stage don't want to hear the sound kicking back
Yeah.
in a quite of a delay. So some arenas they can't play in, so
Yeah.
they always have the echo from themselves, so
Wow.
they don't can they can't play there.
Yeah. So,
That's not happening in Leksand. That's good.
but you mentioned kind of when we were talking offline too, because you have different requirements and different standards, so to speak. So take Leksand, who's the SHL arena, where it's designed for, or it's supposed to be designed for a specific thing, right? This is the, and it's a lot more expensive to run the arena than it is now what's called, it's called Claes Olsson Foundation Arena, which it's changed names a few times, but the practice or the secondary sheet, which is smaller, it's the same ice surface, right? Same dimensions.
60, 30 meters,
Okay.
60 long, 30 wide.
So it's the same ice surface, but it's smaller, there's less stands, and
Colder.
so it's colder. Okay.
Lot colder.
So therefore it's cheaper to maintain the ice surface, and they used to, now they put in a concrete,
Yeah, finally.
finally.
Yeah,
Should
it
have
was
done it from the
gravel
beginning.
before. So the concrete is it makes it a lot easier to work with the ice.
Yeah. And you have then the combination of the Zamboni that can run between, you have the same room that they can run out here, or they can run out there. But
One direction, the big arena, the other direction in the training arena.
yeah. Which provides you with now flexibility with what can you do with now two ice surfaces is, number one, you can provide more ice time, because let's face it, kids that are going to use this are not going to want to skate at 11 p.m. So, and they can't skate at 10 a.m. because they're in school. So there's only so much time between 5 p.m. and 9 p.m., so to speak. And if
It's
there's only,
always a fight for the
yes.
ice time.
Yes.
So we came up with a solution. We looked in the Northern America with a smaller rink, like mini ice rink,
Yeah.
more like what we call a basketball plane,
Yeah.
about that size. So you can it's more like you take the heat off the ice, the big arena. So
Yep.
you can put the small kids and some of the younger people who are playing ice hockey on the small ice. So it's a very cheap solution to get more ice rinks because more kids can play there. So
How common is it to have those ponds or smaller ponds in Sweden now?
one.
In the entire Sweden?
One in Uppsala.
That's crazy.
We talked about it yesterday, me and a friend of mine. We should roll out this because the Ice Hockey Federation in Sweden wants to get more ice.
Yes.
But you don't have the big eyes. You can make a small eyes, the mini.
Or put, I mean, there's so much more that you can do with, let's say, two small sheets that so I give an example. So when we were in Mariestad, awesome in the they have two sheets. One side is mainly used for the younger kids. So they have all the small boards, they have the netting set up where they can divide the ice, right? But it still is a full sheet, just like in Leksand. So the game has adopted, the practices and the games are cross ice, but the rink is still a big full sheet that they're modifying the existing one. So when I was coaching, let's say U14 team here, a lot of times we were underutilizing, or I mean we really were only working on blue line and in, right? And the rest of the time, now we may have had half sheet and shared the ice with another team, but I think that there's ways that you can make it more economical. We did it because we only had so much ice. So we only had half a sheet for an hour, and then U16 had half a sheet on the other side. But then we were working on, let's say, 3-on-3 down low, or we were playing 2-on-2. And you're working on that small area game, but in a U8, U9, U10 environment, the kids are much smaller. That's almost like full ice for them anyway.
If you measure the time the kids have the puck
Yeah.
in, if they play in a little bit bigger, like the you play from the blue to the start, the guys who are very good at skating keeps the puck all the time.
Yep.
But when you could put them in a small, like this mini, like I think it's 18 meters something. Every kid has to get the puck. The good one can't keep it all the way because it's not enough room. They can't go around them. They
And
have
there's
to go through them.
lots and lots of studies with the American development model and the small area games here that of why should you have smaller ice versus big ice. That's been going on here in the US for years. And the factual, there's so many studies and the facts are, no doubt. But I think from a and there are a lot of small rinks here, but that's typically been built by, let's say, a private rink that says, we've got two sheets, we got a small puddle that we can now utilize and rent out for goalie practices or skill development. And then we have a middle sheet that is kind of a half sheet. I don't see a whole lot of half sheets, which is kind of what you're talking about. It's really
No, it's maybe a third of full ice. It's quite a good measure.
But I do see that as it provides flexibility. The other part about it is that the operating cost on a smaller sheet would be much less, correct? Because you don't have the same demands that you do in the arena. The lighting doesn't have to be the same. The temperature doesn't have to be the same. Even if you compare it to the practice arena, it could be very different.
It's very, I say, if I have to guess, full tent arena, I think it's about 33 million Swedish crowns.
Okay.
Then you get a big tent and a full ice place. If you want a mini arena that's a third of a full rink, it's I think it's around 17, 18 million Swedish crowns.
But if
So
you had, but if you had
it's
that
not
in,
even.
if you take a town like Mariestad or Leksand, where you already have an existing facility, if you had the space to then add a small sheet, the cost of that would be much less than
Absolutely. If
if
you
you
can
set up
share
a.
the cooling equipment, it's definitely going to be a lot cheaper. But you're missing one point. With this mini rink, You can place it where people live. You can't do that with a full. It's too much space.
And now
But
we're
a
coming.
small one, you can put where people live, so you can walk to the ice rink.
Now we come in full circle to Besheng's pond.
Yes. But it's more exclusive than the only little pond.
Yeah.
But you want it where people live. It's easier to get there.
But is there a demand for that though?
I think so. But people doesn't know it exists yet. But
Yeah.
soon they will. So for a real estate company who owns several blocks, it's a lot cheaper to build a mini ice rink on under a tent than building the playground.
Yeah. Do you see that as also a method for teams or for youth teams or youth organizations to be able to utilize that? Or is it just more for a
Absolutely.
recreational?
No, absolutely. If you have a one player who's has been injured
Yep.
and has to
Yeah.
what do you call,
Rehabilitate.
rehabilitate. It's perfect to do the technical training on the smaller rink.
Yep.
Fast start, stop, small movements.
And
You got that speed.
I'm assuming too that you can have then the times that are after schools are going to be by appointment, and then it's open ice during more of the time. It's so do you see that as the next step in hockey arenas in Sweden?
Absolutely. We have one today. We have in it's I think it would be about 20, 40 in 3 or 4 years,
Yeah.
as long as people know that it exists.
What do you think is going to be the net result of doing that? So let's pretend 2040. Now we have
More Swedish players in NHL.
yeah, but
Maybe.
and I mean do you do, but why is that? Is that because they got more ice, or is it because you got more players that got into the game that therefore got more talent and you created the breadth?
Yeah, today the probability or the possibility to get on the ice is very small.
Yeah.
You have to have a dad or a mom that's very interested in ice hockey and drives the kid to the trainings and so on. If you have it on the backyard,
Yeah.
it's very easy to get to. You can walk there. Your mother can open the window and say, "Hans, it's dinner now. Oh, sorry guys, I have to eat." So
Yeah.
you can walk back. That's not possible to in the big arenas.
Yeah.
So you have to get it close, like our pond in the
Yeah.
village.
Yeah.
You can go there any time you want, and you can go home anytime you want.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and that's kind of brings me back to the, and we can kind of wrap up with this, and that's kind of Philip Forsberg's idea of when they first. Everybody talks about how he became a good hockey player was on the ice rink in Åkra,
Yeah.
which was not across the river in Leksand. It was in Åkra,
Next door.
next door, which is in Leksand, but it's not in the
Yeah.
central of Leksand. It's the pond, or it's the mini rink in. But that was in the wintertime, and the problem with that is that someone it becomes very maintenance heavy.
Yeah.
Someone has to clean the ice. Someone has to, and it's dark.
Yeah. It's cold.
It's cold.
It's snowing. It's storm. But the kids want to be there anyway. They don't see the storm. They don't feel the cold. They want
Yeah.
to just play and have fun.
Yeah.
And that's the key question. You have to make it fun.
Yeah. And I think that there are, I don't think that there's one solution that is going to solve all of them, but I think that
Yeah.
there's multiple things that I think that Swedish Hockey Federation should find ways, or the municipalities should find ways to encourage more bond participation, more rinks to be maintained by schools, and and available, and more recruitment programs, so to speak, of from the activity centers or from the municipality to say, hey, hockey is still a sport that is an awesome sport.
Yeah, and you can borrow the equipment. You
Yes.
can, you don't have to buy it expensive things like the composite
Yeah.
sticks that you have now. So make it easy
Yeah.
to get there,
Yeah.
and you don't have to buy a lot of things to just to going skating.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to solve all the problems in the world
No.
today, you and I, but that's what the BPUBN is for.
Yeah, yes.
Is that's where all the world's problems are solved.
That's
Is
for a whole different kind of pod.
yeah, that is. But it's fun to kind of talk about. I think that it's this thing about hockey is for everyone. Unfortunately, the trajectory is that it's getting more and more expensive. And if you don't have a clear strategy to fight against that, to alleviate or eliminate those barriers of entry, those barriers of continuation where people quit play in and these type of things, if you don't, the fear that I have is that a country like Sweden are gonna, decrease rather than increase in the numbers and their competitiveness in hockey.
Yeah,
It,
I
you
agree.
know, it's been fun to kind of chat around a little old time mixed with engineering and not the most sexy topic, but I think we got some good points upon.
Well, without the arenas, you can't play ice hockey. So
Yeah.
it all depends on us.
And we're going to make a projection here that, or prediction that in 10 years we're going to have how many small pond or small arenas in Sweden?
I would guess around 40,
Okay.
50, if 10 years, maybe 40, 50, I
That's
think.
an aggressive that surprised me, but let's see.
Yes.
I
Aim
think
for the stars.
that's right.
Nothing's impossible until proven the otherwise.
Thank you so much for joining. I enjoy
Yeah.
the conversation, and we'll continue another time.
Yeah, thank you.